So in the context of what we're going to be talking about this morning, I figured that this was going to be a worthwhile title. I have very limited time. I've got to do this in 20 minutes, so this is going to be a rolling gallop. So we're going to start with the collisions. Now, I had debated whether I would give my entire presentation this morning looking at just this one slide. In the end, I decided against it, but I'm going to talk about this for a little bit. This is a website. This is a website from the United States called ratemyprofessors.com. Let me explain what it is. A couple of years ago, these folks just set up a website and invited people to provide reviews of their lecturers at unis throughout America. Now, they had no content of their own. All they had was a website address and some software that would collate the results as they came in. That's it. And then a connected generation of students did the rest. And this has now become, in the United States, the definitive resource for students to figure out whether they want to take a class with that professor or not. Professors are being hired and fired and lured away and getting sudden raises based on their ratings inside this website. This website tells us that the balance of control, which has for all of history sat firmly with the educators, has in fact suddenly, completely, and utterly been wrenched away. The educators are no longer in control of process anymore. In fact, the people who are being delivered the education, that is the students, are now firmly in control of the process because the students now have tools that allow them to self-organize and out-organize any institution which is attempting to constrain them in any way. Now, one of my dearest friends whom I've known for 30 years is a university professor in America, and so I went and checked out his page. He and I actually chatted about it yesterday because the first review, he's a great lecturer and his students really do love him. The first review is a little meh. And he's like, oh, I think I knew who that guy was. But of course, it really is all anonymously. Now, he's not supposed to use this formally when he's deciding whether he's going to hire a faculty member. And he doesn't use it formally. He's head of department, though, so you'd be sure he does, in fact, go to this site, and he checks it out, because he doesn't want to hire someone that the kids hate. It just doesn't make sense for him. So this is another thing that's going on here. Now, this strikes into a whole bunch of different things that are going on in the world now. Knowledge formation, because this is a base of knowledge. Knowledge formation is no longer constrained to elites. All right? Knowledge can be formed by anyone, anywhere, and that knowledge can then be shared, which means that education is no longer a business of elites. He understands this, actually. Now, you'll be happy to see, I ran that. I put Tafe Sidney through, rate my professors. You're not in there. But you don't get off that easy. Because you do know about Board of Studies. Yeah, I see some heads nodding. You know about Board of Studies, and if you type in Sidney Institute or Tafe Sidney, you do get a whole bunch of hits. Do you folks know what's being said about you in here? You need to. All right, Pam, very much. You need to have someone in marketing constantly looking at this, constantly with their finger in the breeze, understanding what's being said. Because this is knowledge formation as well. These are basically HSC students, first-year university students, they're in that range, and they're trying to figure out what they're going to be doing. These are the students whom, if you can reach the most effectively, you will be able to get into Sidney Institute. If you can convince them there, or help them convince each other there, because that's really what's going on. Because this process of knowledge formation, this process of education, is multilateral. It's not top-down, it's not bottom-up, it's happening from all directions simultaneously. Now, against this context, we have four significant revolutions that have happened over the last 4 years, and they're coming so fast and so quick now that we're just starting to get a little bit numb. When I arrived in Australia, which is not quite 5 years ago, none of this in any meaningful way existed. All right, YouTube launched February 2005. And YouTube, we think of it as dogs and skateboards and silly videos. No, I want you to type in how to make a cake, how to speak French, how to repair a carburetor. Pop all of those into YouTube. YouTube is becoming all things to all people. It's now becoming an incredible, intense resource, and it becomes an educational resource more and more every day. Podcasting, literally the term was coined about a month after I moved here. Podcasting allows someone to take an audio recording or a video recording and put it up, publish it, and share it to absolutely everybody. So I now have the capacity to reach an audience of any size with any content whatsoever at basically very little cost. Wikipedia. You all know what Wikipedia is. The first time I mentioned Wikipedia to a room full of educators, which was in November of 2004, all I got was, what? Now you all know what it is. Now we all know what it is, and we're actually dealing with the fact that this is the new model for knowledge formation. This is the first original model for knowledge formation in 500 years, basically since we got the scientific method. And now we're dealing with what that means in the context of culture, in the context of education, in the context of politics, so on and so on and so forth. And then we have the mobility revolution, and I have my little iPhone in the bag. Bought it the day it came out, of course. But we have this idea now that everything is available pervasively, ubiquitously, continuously, from any point to any other point. So this is 5 years. Okay? Any one of these in any decade would be the big story of that decade. These are now popping out, and there's another one, but I'm coming to it a little bit later, which is just as significant. These are now popping out the chute. Bam, 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 bam. The people you're educating represent a fairly broad range of capabilities with these and a fairly broad range in terms of ages, and they don't necessarily correlate. Someone in their 60s, in fact, my mom had broadband before I did. All right, someone in their 60s could be incredibly adept. Someone in their teens might only have a phone and might only text and call on it. But all of these technologies have a place in the delivery, but not just the delivery, the ability to connect with the people who are trying to be educated. And all of this has produced a really sort of weird modern situation, which I call hyperconnectivity. We have so many different ways of being connected to other people now. It's no longer just a single point of contact, but I can get you via SMS, I can get you via phone, I can send you an email, I can chat you on IM, I can get you on a group that you belong to or a bulletin board and da 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 da. All right, we have all these multiple points of connectivity, and they're also not just person to person. They're one to many, or many to many, or many to one, so on and so forth. All right? This has changed the game, because a lot of what we're trying to do now in our practice as educators and our practice as administrators is actually deal with the fact that we're being assaulted by too many connections that are demanding our attention at once. And all I can say is, we're in a cultural learning process with this. Some people just give up. I was doing a radio interview in the United States yesterday. I got up ridiculously early because it was happening in America. And someone said that 2 years ago he had simply given up his cell phone. He'd basically become a monk. He actually had to go get one for work, but it was a prepaid model and no one in America knew the number. All right? And we all, you know, we sort of half think, wow, that sounds really great, doesn't it? That whole sort of sea change thing, all right? And yet at the same time, in order for us to really be functional in our work, but also in our social lives, we actually become completely intertwined with the hyperconnectivity offered by those devices. Now, the story doesn't end there. The story doesn't even begin there. I mean, this is just, you know, and this is not current. This is, I created this slide 12 months ago, and now there's half a dozen other silly named companies and silly named services on here, like Quick and Snacker and 12 Seconds and all this other stuff that's coming along the pipe. We have more and more different kinds of services that allow people to create their own communities, share in those own communities, educate themselves along those own communities, and play that tug-of-war of control, which has already been definitively lost. Now, here's the thing. That is quite often the conception of what the classroom is. It is an archaic institution which is not connected. And we have to get away from this. We have gotten away from this in a lot of ways, because the thing of it is that the students walk into the classroom already being extremely well connected. Now the question is, how much does what's happening inside the classroom reflect the reality of the thing that's happening outside the classroom walls? Now, there's always going to be a tension, because a lot of what's happening outside the classroom walls is not important to what's happening inside the classroom. But there's also a lot that's happening outside the classroom walls that's of extreme importance, of fundamental importance to what's happening inside the classroom. And so how do you negotiate the connectivity and the needs for that connectivity? It's not just a connected classroom. It's about refiguring what the wall means. What does the classroom wall mean? Well, the classroom wall means it's establishing a space where the learning takes place. And if that means turning off your phone for a while a lecture is going on, that's reasonable. But how high is that wall, and why is that wall there? And this is the thing we have to think through, because that wall was natural. That was an artifact of history. That was simply the way the classroom evolved over several hundred years in the West. But that's not what the classroom is anymore. The classroom is now not a wall, but it's rather a layer that's permeable to the outside and connects to the outside, and it presents an environment of connection. Now, I don't have any easy answers around what the classroom should look like, because no one has any easy answers here. What we know, though, is that the students walking in already have extremely strong expectations of what kinds of knowledge they can get, what kinds of knowledge they can form, what kinds of knowledge they can participate in, because this is already happening in the world outside the classroom. Let's go back to ratemyprofessors.com. All right, that's what I'm saying. I could build my entire talk around that one slide. All right, so that's the situation. Here are my recommendations. First, capture everything. Now, off stage here behind that is my high-definition video camera, and we're making an audio recording of this so that after I walk out today, I'll get an MP3 file, probably an email. I'll be able to marry it to the video over here. And then all of you will be able to watch this if you care to ever watch this again, or forward it to a friend, or so on and so on and so on. The classroom is a place where knowledge is created and knowledge is shared. And all of those moments of creation and sharing have enormous value. To not capture that, and you don't know how many talks that I give where I walk in and it's like, are you recording this? And they're like, no. And I'm thinking, okay, and these my corporate clients pay me thousands of dollars to give a talk. And it's as if they're pouring this water out on the ground. They don't understand. All of these moments have value, so always capture everything. Yeah, the lighting's going to be bad. Yeah, the sound's not going to be perfect. Who cares? Who cares? It doesn't matter. Because when you capture something, and I did this, the reason I bought this camera was because I was doing a series of lectures for school educators through ACER called Those Wacky Kids. And when I got to Adelaide, because Adelaide had their shit together, they had everything set up so we could make a good audio recording. I had the video recording. We married it. I posted it up online the next week and let the educators who had attended the events in the four cities we did know, and then they could tell friends and so on and so forth. And so at this point, almost 13,000 people, most of them educators, have seen this video. So it has a life beyond that, because I captured it, because I shared it. And that's the second point. Share everything. All right? There's a new rule for how economies of information work in the 21st century. This is my mantra. I want you to be your mantra as well. The more something is shared, the more valuable it becomes. Information is no longer an economy of scarcity. It is an economy of hyperabundance. And therefore, the resources that are shared the most widely, which of course would have a Sydney Institute tag and marketing branding wherever they go, ambition in action, wherever they go, extend the value of the environment. Now, let's face it, your peers are not unaware of this. Uni New South Wales has a YouTube channel. It seems to be mostly connected with marketing Uni New South Wales at this point. But it does have, and it was the first university in Australia to establish its own YouTube channel. Now, ideally, I know where they're working. Every classroom is basically going to be capturing or has the capacity to capture every lecture. So an instructor should be able to walk into the room, hit a button, begin the record, hit a button again, and then by the time the kids are out in the street, that's actually up on YouTube, and the kids have already gotten a URL so they can play the lecture again and get their notes and so on and so on and so on. And Uni Melbourne has done this on iTunes University. All right, so the students are getting it through iTunes. They can put it on their iPods or watch it on their PC or their Macintosh, the whole thing. And again, taking a lot of their material and sharing it. Now, I haven't dug in deep enough to take a look at whether Uni Melbourne's offering everything. Stanford University and MIT, my alma mater, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, two of the top 10 universities in the world, much less North America, are doing it with every single class they offer. And people pay $40,000 a year to go to these schools. Why? Because Stanford and MIT understand that the value of an education is not being able to watch a lecture on the screen. It's the moment of transference that takes place when you have a competent instructor working in an embodied way with a student who's actually physically present. But sharing this information around actually extends the value of that embodied education. It increases that value. Open everything. You're going to be making a lot of purchasing decisions. You're going to be making a lot of design decisions over the next several months as you figure out where to spend all of his money. And you need to think from a basic design, because trust me, the vendors are all going to be here and they're going to take you out to dinner and do everything within the limits. Now, this is New South Wales, around the limits of legality, to be able to get you to buy their really expensive, enclosed, and proprietary products that are going to lock you into something that may or may not do what you want it to do for the next billion years. Well, let's go back to the example of Wikipedia. Wikipedia is the most important project in knowledge formation in the last, well, at least in my generation, and probably a great deal longer than that. Wikipedia is open in the sense that anyone can add to Wikipedia. Anyone can take away from Wikipedia. Anyone can vandalize Wikipedia, but really there's no payoff in vandalizing Wikipedia because it's really easy to fix. But the idea is that it is an open platform for the sharing of knowledge. And its success grows directly from the fact that it is an open platform for the sharing and creation of knowledge. But the thing that Wikipedia is built from, which is a piece of software called MediaWiki, is itself an open piece of software so that you can get it and install it and maintain it and add to it and share it and so on and so forth, and you don't have to pay for it. And there's a group of people working worldwide who are doing exactly the same thing so that when you're having a problem, you can do a shout-out. And remember, in this day and age, when you do a shout-out to the community, you actually get replies back because these people all have an investment in making sure that your software is working too. And Moodle is a piece of classroom software which is open source. And it's Australian. Aussie, Aussie, Aussie. Oi, oi, oi. It's made in Perth. And it provides classroom software. There are commercial solutions that are similar to this. Blackboard. What's the other one? Someone has shouted out. I know. I'm sorry? WebCT. That's it. Okay. And I tend to blot those out of my mind because whenever I hear an instructor mention them, they turn red and they have to take their blood pressure meds and things like that. I actually never hear anyone say that about Moodle. And the reason why is because both Blackboard and WebCT, they do exactly what they do with the day they're installed, and if you don't like that, you either have to pay those companies enormous amounts of money or you have to suck it up, which means most people don't actually use these systems very much. Whereas a Moodle system, if someone is intense enough about wanting a feature in Moodle, they will go and add it, or they will find someone and pester them into going and adding it. And so Moodle grows and grows and grows. And again, Moodle is free. It is open source. It's this idea that knowledge creation isn't just happening at this sort of top level between the teacher and student in the classroom. It's happening at an integrated level through the entire process of building the resources required for education. And finally, my last recommendation, Remember, we're talking about what's the difference between the inside of the classroom and the outside of the classroom, and I want to come back here and talk about this. Now, I talked about the innovations that have been happening on the web in the past years, and we've been getting sort of one per year, and this year's is something called Twitter. Now, how many of you have heard of Twitter? Well, then there you go. Okay. For those of you who haven't, Twitter is what we would think of as a social messaging service, all right? There are, I think at this point in time, 1,510 people who have decided that I have interesting things to say, and therefore when I send a tweet, which is 140 characters, no more, all 1,510 people get a copy of that message. And I'm actually following about 1,020 other people, and whenever one of those 1,020 people send a tweet, I get a copy of that message. Now, it's not coming into my email because it would explode, but it's coming in through a web page. It can come in through my mobile phone if I wanted to get that much SMS traffic. And there is a bunch of different software applications that can do that. Now, the interesting thing is that I have a tendency to follow people who are in Australia. I'm being followed by people all around the world, but I have a tendency to follow people in Australia. And because I've been talking to a lot of educators about Twitter, I'm also being followed and following a lot of Australian educators. And the interesting thing about this, the beautiful thing about this, is that when one of them writes an interesting blog post about what they did with Moodle, or finds an interesting article about using Twitter in an education or whatever, and they post it, I'm now getting, as if it were wired into my cortex, this lovely little mix. And some of it's effluvia, trust me, when Eurovision was on, all right, there were 50 Australians who were cracking them. I didn't even know what Eurovision was, but it was so funny that I actually went and turned on Eurovision, because we don't get Eurovision in America. All right, during the Olympics opening ceremonies on Friday night, again, you had all the Australians either oohing and aahing and going really snarky because the commentary on Channel 7 was so horrendous. But it was that was all happening. So Twitter has these inane moments, but it also has this ability to be able to take an enormous amount of the bright people that I'm connected to and bringing that directly to me. And it has its moments. And one of the moments, and that's a small portion, because not only am I connected to people on Twitter, but they're all connected to each other, particularly in Australia. That's just a visualization of how that looks. After the Sichuan earthquake, this gentleman whom I'm connected to, Dedrick Lam, spent the next 36 hours, and he's in Shanghai, spent the next 36 hours acting as a clearinghouse via Twitter, helping people find each other, helping people find resources, so on and so on and so forth. All right? So that when there's a need, this sort of gibbering group mind or Twitter can actually get a laser-like focus. And Twitter is banned by the DET firewall. Ladies and gentlemen, I've heard of stupid things in my life. It's not up there with believing that the earth is flat. But in terms of kneecapping your capability to be able to participate in the conversation that defines the 21st century, of being able to harvest the best and the brightest from all around the world and bring them in, to allow those multi-level conversations between students and educators and students and students and students and the world, you have to let things in. You have to err constantly on the side of openness rather than closedness, because the openness presents the opportunity and the advantage. And because at the end of the day, the thing that we're realizing is that the classroom is the place where the conversation happens, where the learning moment happens. And so this is the vision that you're going to experience as you put your heads together this afternoon, but this is the vision of what happens in the magic moment of education. It's that people are there collaborating, looking at what each other's done and collaborating some more and adding to it. That's knowledge formation. And we now have the best tools in human history to be able to do that. So don't shut those down. Tear down the walls. And that's it. Thank you very much. No, you're not being recorded. That's the biggest danger that's going to be faced by all educational institutions. You're staring down the barrel of that gun. In fact, the more effectively that students can self-organize, the more they can effectively learn themselves, or effectively educate themselves, all right? And so that's going to be one of the forces that's in play in the 21st century. The thing that you're offering is the moment. This is the thing. It's the connection. Because there's a transference of confidence and a transference of competence. And that happens best when you are embodied, when it's two people, all right? But we know this, all right? That's what you're offering. So share it all to show that you can create that moment, all right?
Anyone else? I think you might be home free, Mark.
Yeah, just one other thing. I notice in a lot of this talk, there's nothing mathematical. And a lot of our education is about mathematics. And in fact, there doesn't seem to be too many tools that are very convenient and a lot of sharing of mathematical issues.
I think there are. I haven't talked about any specific avenue of education in this. I don't know if you've seen Wikipedia's entries on mathematics. They're stunning, all right? They're stunning. They generally require at least a fairly strong university background in mathematics, because they're really intense. And there are actually a lot of visualization tools that have been created. I know this because this, in my former life as an inventor, I invented a 3D interface to the World Wide Web, which was immediately taken up by physicists and mathematicians to be able to do simulations. So there's been a fair amount of work. I don't know the specifics of where those communities live, but those communities do in fact live. And I think that's part of what's happening now is those communities can now link up, they can find each other, and then create the volume of content that students may need to work from, all right? But, I mean, again, you're absolutely right. This is another argument for making capture such an important thing, because if you're teaching a mathematics lesson, you want to be able to, some students are going to want to be able to watch that again and again and again and again and again to understand what is this formula, what is this transformation that he was doing. Absolutely. All right? Trish. I think you should probably go have a look yourself. No. Board of Studies is mostly for people who are aiming at a uni. It's mostly HSC to uni. So, but I think you should go and have a look. Because the thing of it is I just did a search in and I came up with a whole bunch of threads, and I wasn't going to just sort of look through all the threads to see what they're saying about Sydney Institute. So, but I think you should go and do that and to understand and to figure out how you have a place in that conversation, because that conversation is taking place whether or not you want it to. And trust me, when I was doing this with UNSW, they knew this conversation was taking place. They don't like it because they have no control over it. They can't frame it in any way. People can say horrible things, which may or may not be true, but it doesn't matter. That conversation is going to happen. If you try to shut it down somewhere, it's going to pop up somewhere else. So in the back there.
Oh, I just wanted to thank you, Mark. That was a great presentation. During the year, we've had other presenters come to us and talk to us about digital marketing. We're getting the same message now about the content is king, just the way you did that so succinctly. I know the people here that are working with new technologies in the Institute will have been really excited by your talk, and yes, their plea with us is to open up, and for those of us who aren't even very good with the technology, that just the frustration inside of not being able to get onto sites, you know, it's difficult, and it was a great presentation. Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you. I think one of the things we're... Although content is king was a mantra that was used particularly by content companies where they were trying to sell you content, which was universally true, it's a bit of a lie. Connection is king, all right? Because connection then creates the moment, particularly in an educational context, where transference of knowledge and skills happen when knowledge formation occurs, all right? And that's the thing, is that when you try to go out of that firewall and you can't connect, that's exactly it. All right, it's a violation of this idea that connection is king. Now, obviously, DET has a duty of care. I could go on long and lovingly about what I really think about duty of care, but that's another matter. But when you're talking about students who are now in their majority, then you have to deal with this completely differently. And this is something that this is a battle that I would advise is worth fighting, and it's worth winning.
All right. Yeah. Pam, last one.
Thanks. Mark, I also wanted to say thank you. One of the issues that we face is not being able to get the message out about who we are and, you know, the fantastic success stories of our graduates.
Right.
So through our marketing, we've been trying to look at different approaches to that.
Mm.
Because generally in the community, there's a perception that, and often amongst school leavers, that TAFE's where you go if you don't get into uni,
right.
It's second choice.
Right.
Whereas, in fact, in the current environment of skill shortages, there are amazing opportunities of, and stories of our graduates that have fantastic career successes. And many, of course, do go on to uni. Many university students come to us to get the competitive edge.
Right.
So
right.
I think your message about openness is really important for us. As we face competition, we often think we have to hold everything in and be more competitive by, you know, keeping all the secrets to ourselves. But what I certainly got from your talk was a very, very different message. No, we have to open everything and share everything and be very, very open with not only our whole market but with our competitors as well. Would you go...
Well, your competitors aren't going to out-compete you by being close. That's the thing, is that openness is a competitive advantage now. It's not the same kind of competitive advantage that you had a generation ago. But this is not the same world of a generation ago. And that's the thing, is that when you're thinking of students who want to learn flexibly, they need to learn flexibly, because unless you're young, you have a life. And you simply have so many other responsibilities. If you're retraining, and that's, of course, that's going to be your big focus. You mentioned this, is bringing people into different new career skills in midlife means that they have to learn flexibly because there's no alternative for them. And so the degree of openness and sharing then provides that frame for them to be able to be proactive about the flexibility about how they're acquiring their education. And that gives you an advantage then that, you know, a small little private school isn't going to be able to offer, because they... there's a cost, an opportunity cost associated with that, which you're large enough to be able to leverage, but some smaller schools not.
And just in terms of marketing, have you got any examples of really progressive organizations that are marketing in a very different way?
In terms of education, you mean? No, I'm trying to think of anything.
Honestly, I didn't look up Border Studies, but I have looked up YouTube and Google Ultimo TAFE or TAFE or Sydney TAFE or whatever. And, found some interesting things. Found one of our teachers selling some learning materials online. Thought that was very innovative. but there wasn't that much talk, no. So, but again... we have, as you said, we have to monitor that, and we have to. I think we've still got a lot to learn about how we use that space to get the message out.
Just one last question. We do. We need to let Mark go, and we need to also
carry on.
In regards to MIT, where they put something like more than 2,000 courses.
Right.
Are you still in contact with them? Are you aware, of any changes in their roles or financial situation?
Oh, yeah, no. It's had no... It's had no negative impacts in that respect. I mean, MIT is always really oversubscribed, because it's in the top tier American unis, and so those are always oversubscribed. So it's had no effect on enrollments. What I don't know is, I think that the statistic would be most interesting is their download numbers for the courses, because that would be really interesting. Because then, MIT courses are going to be at such a high level that they're going to be basically high graduate to postgraduate courses for, just on average. So the market for that is going to be relatively small. But the same thing's true for Stanford. The thing that it's done is it's extended their brand, and both of those schools are also extremely well known for being the places for technical innovation. You know, the founders of Sun Microsystems and Google and Yahoo all came out of Stanford. The founders of DEC and, you know, other companies came out of MIT. So there's that sense that those universities need to put up or shut up in order to sort of maintain that presence. But there's been no channel competition in that sense between having things up on iTunes University and having the classes.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mark. That was, I think, fantastic. And I think we could probably spend all morning having these conversations. I found that incredibly inspiring. So thank you very much.